Recording in progress.
Come to order, the Honorable Susan Van Keulen presiding.
Morning, good morning, everyone. We're on today for a status conference with regards to the preliminary injunction. So, Ms. Fanthorpe, if you'll call the matter, we'll get underway.
Certainly, calling case 20-CV-9425, Homeless Union et al. Versus Bernal et al. Counsel, please identify yourselves for the record, beginning with plaintiff.
Good morning, everybody. Anthony Prince for plaintiffs.
Mr. Prince, good morning.
Good morning. Cassie Bronson for the defendants.
Good morning, Ms. Bronson.
Good morning, Tony Condotti, city attorney, and for the defendants.
Mr. Condotti, welcome back. All right. As I said, we're on today for status regarding the preliminary injunction. And I did receive the updated or most recent submissions of the parties. Thank you for those. I appreciate that. Couple of issues, and then I'll turn to counsel. Obviously, what brings us here is I had issued the preliminary injunction in January in light of the, at that time, I found that the COVID pandemic created a situation, specifically a state-created danger, that is the eviction notice from San Lorenzo Park in light of the pandemic, that tipped the likelihood of success with regards to the claims in the complaint in the plaintiff's favor. As I indicated at the time, the balancing in this case has always been with a lot on both sides. The city's concerns for the environment of the park, as well as the safety of those in the park and around the park, and of course the plaintiff's concerns with regards to the unsheltered persons who are encamped or were encamped in the park. And the key factor in that, in the balance and in issuing the injunction, was of course the status of the COVID pandemic. So I issued the injunction and I said we would continue to monitor the situation, and we've had a couple of status conferences since then, and here we are now in May. The backdrop as I see it is that the metrics around the pandemic have continued to improve. They have been improving in recent months and have continued to improve. And that appears to apply to all metrics: infections, hospitalizations, deaths. And California is very fortunate at this time to be enjoying some of the lowest numbers in the country. And we're very fortunate in that regard. We also have greater access to vaccine. Obviously, we have the vaccine. There's greater access. We can't require and don't require anyone to get it, but access to for the unsheltered persons using the encampments was one of the factors that we certainly discussed last time. And it appears from the papers that those efforts have continued to make vaccines accessible, and that's a significant factor, I think, in continuing our evaluation of this process. The last time we gathered, the city asked that the injunction be dissolved, or it had an alternative proposal to which the court gave very careful consideration, and we spent a fair amount of time discussing, and that was that the city be allowed to close San Lorenzo Park to encampment, to allow it to be cleaned and rehabilitated, and for the safety of the community, and that a significant number of the unsheltered persons encamped there be issued permits to move to the benchlands, to the adjacent benchlands. And in the papers that the city recently submitted, they've outlined their process for how they issued permits, how they've moved people, and it sounds like the benchlands is now established and underway, and San Lorenzo is now empty. So I want to hear more about that from both sides. I know that plaintiffs had raised an issue about the issuing of permits or whether or not it was San Lorenzo persons who were moved to benchlands or others. since it's been presented to the court, I think at this point, my perception is that it demonstrates that the city has done what the court directed it to do and what it offered it to do in its proposed compromise. The plaintiffs did not oppose the compromise per se, that is the move to the bench lens, although there were concerns that were raised and discussed with regards to what additional rules and regulations would be enforced with that move. And I know we had some discussion around that, and I made some modifications to the city's proposal and then modified the preliminary injunction to reflect that move to the bench lens. So I'm interested in hearing what that status is, what the plan is in terms of going forward, and specifically, and when I say the plan going forward, I'm talking about just as it relates to San Lorenzo Park and the bench lens. That's the issue we've been dealing with in this litigation, and particularly in light of the June 15th date that is actually around the corner now, where the governor has indicated that we will leave the colored tier system and essentially have the state will be reopened in its, sounds like, full capacity. I'm not sure I fully understand what June 15 is, but I want to hear from the city how that implicates this situation and the bench lens, as obviously as well from the plaintiffs. I will say that there have been other broader issues raised, particularly by the plaintiffs, with regards to subsequent legislation and developments, such as the Santa Cruz no camping ordinance that has come up in recent months. It's gotten a lot of play in the local press, and plaintiffs did raise it in their papers. And I think in further papers, the plaintiffs raised the clearing of encampments along Highway 1 by Caltrans, all of which I appreciate that they relate to the unsheltered population in the city of Santa Cruz, but it is far beyond the scope of the action in this case. Again, I always go back to the complaint, and the issues before this court are very focused on the eviction from San Lorenzo Park at the height of the pandemic. And all of the claims are based on these actions being taken while we were in a very unfortunate surge, and frankly, what we hope are the last of the dark days of this pandemic. So that's my perception, that those other subsequent issues around the city of Santa Cruz don't relate to the issues here before us today. And if I've missed that, or there's some connection, Mr. Prince, you have an opportunity to enlighten me. So that's what I'd really like to hear about, how the status quo is working. Has the city's alternative proposal, is it being fulfilled, and does that seem to be working? And what are the appropriate next steps between here and June 15th? So, Mr. Prince, I'll start with you. You're the plaintiff, and then Ms. Bronson, I'll turn to the city. Thank you.
Okay, well, excuse me. Thank you, Your Honor. Well, I guess, as we indicated in our, there may have been some confusion, Your Honor. We initially filed a updated status report, and then we followed that up with, I entitled it errata, but it was actually a request to disregard that status report and instead consider the modified status report, or the one that we meant to file. And we had expressed concerns about who was being relocated and the number of people still in the park who had not yet been granted permits, or if it had a permit, not a space. But within the last, the council and I met and conferred yesterday, and I think we're in agreement that, you know, these things can become a little chaotic and a little difficult. And in the 48 hours, 72 hours in the run-up to the deadline to clear the park, it seemed that that gap that we were concerned about was substantially addressed. And that, so, you know, that happened. I would say, so the status, I mean, our conception of the status is not that much different than that reported by the city.
Oh, nice.
We're very, as I indicated, we're encouraged. We think we've made some substantial progress and well on the way to being in a position of some confidence that we're moving towards the end of the pandemic and that the scope of the injunction has accomplished its objective overall. However, we still do have some concerns based on some facts and data that we have. The first is that I do understand that the governor is indicating that it could happen in as few as 2 weeks to lift all restrictions and essentially declare the pandemic, if not at an end, in an unrestricted, the restrictions lifted. It's still our position that the, until the CDC or a reliable public health officials or departments, whether it's county, state, or federal, CDC, makes that determination, that our concern would be to leave the encampment in place for that, in part for the, or largely for that reason only.
What specifically is the determination that the pandemic has ended? Is that what you're looking
at? Well, all we're saying simply, Your Honor, is that the CDC, of course, the CDC has to address the nation as a whole. And so the different counties and different states have different situations, and we appreciate that. But as a whole, the CDC guidelines, most recently updated on April 29th, continue to have the exact same language, exact same concern about breaking up the encampments. But having said that, Your Honor, you know, we do feel that we're in a position to talk about going forward. Our concern is that we still don't have any actual records of inoculations, vaccinations actually offered or provided to people in the park. We did get an email, council forwarded me an email from Joy Prodigini from the homeless from the county, indicating that 80% of the people in the park have been offered vaccinations, but no records. And he does say in his email that he can't provide a number. They don't have that information, and that there's an issue and there's some discrepancies between what we've seen in the park as far as offers and inoculations and what we're looking at here. I mean, Mr. Prodigini conceded that they don't really have a number of people that were offered or actually vaccinated. So that remains an issue for us because, you know, originally we talked about a number of at least 2 or 3 weeks after everyone had been offered or actually inoculated. But putting that, so that's a concern. However, obviously, as we move more towards herd immunity or steps towards it, and as you said, Your Honor, the metrics seem to be going down. We still have a concern about variants. We still have concerns about side effects long term. You know, the long haulers, as the medical community calls it. But we, you know, we're encouraged by what we see here. Council and I talked yesterday about, and I think the city, if I understand them, is not necessarily inclined to break up the encampment simply because the pandemic might be coming to an end or the restrictions lifted. What we'd be looking at, I think they indicated in their report they just set it up and they're not looking to take it down necessarily. We talked about possibly, we don't have a firm date, but we talked about at least until the flood, the rainy season is back with us, in which case, historically, they've had to clear the bench.
So like,
you know, we think that I would respectfully reply to the issue of the related concerns of the legislation that was passed on the 11th. And we feel that it's not so much that it's, Your Honor indicated that it's a separate issue and it's outside the scope. But the fact of the matter is we're already seeing from the clearing of Highway 1 and 9, we've already seen a significant increase in people coming to the benchlands. Last count we had was that there's 184 tents down there. With the enforcement of the new ordinance, you're going to see more people coming into the benchlands. So we do think it's going to have an impact fairly soon on the situation there. And what we're concerned about is the city pointing to that, what will almost certainly be, I would think, an increase had difficulties there, conditions, members of, the, of that community, we can call it that, who might be problematic. So I do think there's a certain overlap. Without fully litigating the constitutionality of the ordinance, we do think that whether or not it's legal, it's going to have that effect of changing conditions. And it could be quite quickly, it's already happening at the benchland, such that it would impact the focus of this restraining order. So, you know, it's a concern. I would say, Your Honor, and I know I'm doing a lot of talking here, but what we'd like to see is a date or a time frame within which we can have some stability there. The campers just moved there. The camp really is just only getting underway. We have these additional people coming in, and I perceive more.
Recording stopped.
Oh, recording has stopped.
That's all right. You can proceed.
I can proceed. All right, that's one way of shutting me down, I guess.
No. We have Ms. Bryce. Sometimes Zoom takes a little break.
Oh, all right. So, you know, as I say, and as I think the city is in agreement, the camp is just getting underway. We anticipate problems. They're already with us with what we predicted would be a growth in the population there. What we'd like to see is an order or a slight modification of the order establishing a process. I think Judge England did this in the Chico case, and we're getting indications in some of our other, that's not our case, but he ordered plaintiffs and defendants, the city and the homeless plaintiffs, to set up a regular process. I think they're supposed to meet for twice a month. Kind of long range, beginning now, but looking at some resolving issues around encampments, resolving issues around housing issues, so that we can have an ongoing collaboration, which we don't think is totally beyond the scope of the order here. We think it's a logical continuation of the order, such that we anticipate, after lingering effects, which the medical community is concerned about, from COVID-19. So that's what we'd like to see is perhaps an order that would have the parties
except
set up a structure,
do it
collaborative structure,
it
to
that
we keep the court informed, the court would retain jurisdiction and monitor
recording in progress.
And you know, to the extent that council also indicated there's already some indication of problems in the bench lands, and our concern is that that could be used to break up the encampment, and we wanted to point out, and I want to also again remind the court that there's already in place in your modified order a process that the city itself drafted for dealing with criminal activity and that type of thing. And we do not, I've said it from the beginning, we don't defend the criminal element in the homeless community. That's not something our union does. And we welcome the participation and the police carrying out their duties consistent with due process. And the jails are open now, and we're no more interested in having crime in the encampment than the city is. In fact, the union, my clients, are the direct victims of that crime.
We'll shoot them or
we're not going to defend that. So we think problems in the park, in the bench lands, can be worked out, but are going to arise, already have arisen. And we'd like to have a continued process of meeting, conferring, of collaborating, identifying issues, resolving them,
so
with some oversight from the
a
court.
Meet and confer.
And have you made that proposal to the city? Have you discussed that with the city?
Yeah, Ms. Bronson and I talked about it. I think I brought it up actually at different points throughout this litigation. It was our initial approach to the city. Can we not have an individualized approach to different encampments and identify and resolve issues? I have not made it formally in the sense of I toyed with the idea of filing a new proposed modification with the court. Ms. Bronson suggested that we just. That I just might bring it up here this morning, and that's what I'm doing.
If she's his boss, right?
Yeah.
All right. I have another question. question for you, which is circling back to the issue that you expressed some concern about with regards to records of who had been offered a vaccine or, if not, who'd been vaccinated. Again, I reviewed the city's representations as to how that process has worked. What are you expecting, or what would you expect in terms of references to who or how many had been at least given access to vaccination?
Well, Your Honor, our concern is that, and this does not involve a breach of confidentiality or HIPAA or anything else, is simply a reliable number of people who were offered. There is no number. There's a percentage. There's no number. I have Mr. Cotagini's email right here. The answer he gives is, we don't know. That's a concern for us. We don't need names. We need a number, and we need to know that it's based on a reliable reporting system. Apparently, there is no reporting system. Now, we filed a declaration before, early on, when the county told us that they were going from tent to tent. One of the plaintiffs in this case, Mr. McHenry, accompanied them and then filed a declaration indicating that they had not provided any kind of real information about the vaccine. At best, passed out a handbill. And it was, do you want one? No. Okay. Do you want one? Yes. Okay. And there's been no effort by the county, which is quite different from other counties across the country, and even at the federal level, to encourage members of marginalized communities to get the vaccine. The counties told us they don't think it's their job to promote awareness of the vaccine. And so we question, given that our information on the ground, as we indicated in previous declarations, is that the majority have not been vaccinated and have not truly been offered a vaccination from the sense that they could make informed consent. We repeatedly encourage the city and the county to engage in a collaborative effort with us to provide that type of education, because that's in the best interest of the residents and the city, to get everyone aware of the value of the vaccine and to become vaccinated. We're not confident at all that happened.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Prince. That answers my question. All right. Ms. Bronson, hang on one second. I need a different pen. Apologize. So bring me up to date with regards to the move to the Benchlands, the current status of the encampment there, what the city is thinking or requesting going forward, certainly as between here and June 15th at least. And then I'd like to turn to, let's start there. How about that?
Okay, sure. So it has, it's been a big city effort to create this organized encampment down below at the Benchlands. Took some planning, took some time. As of right now, I believe there are 134 tents. At least that's the latest number that was given to me yesterday by city staff.
How that compares to how many permits the city, I know we were talking about 120, and then it sounded like when you actually got out there and measured out the spaces, there were a few more. So how does that relate?
So 134 permitted sites.
Oh, okay.
So there's 134 permitted sites right now.
Didn't answer the question.
No, there are challenges. The biggest challenge we're having right now is individuals from different tents trying to sort of make large multi-residential units by using tarps and whatnot, which is fire danger. That has been sort of one of the biggest concerns, is trying to deal with that. Encourage campers to, we gave everybody new tents and encourage folks to just keep your own tent individual for fire safety. So that's been a big challenge. I'll say it looks better. from just somebody walking by, but there are still, you know, some of the same challenges that always existed. We're still getting complaints about drug trafficking and noise. And so we're sort of in the very beginning stages of sort of feeling out how this modified injunction might help us to enforce some of the behavioral issues and to deal with some of the life safety issues in managing the situation.
And what's the status now of San Lorenzo Park?
So, I mean, technically, it's all one. It's all part of San Lorenzo Park.
To right, be, but, right. But we treat them separately.
Sure. The upper park area is cleared of encampments. The last I was there, you know, and so I don't believe there's any new campers in there. We do have surrounding areas that may not be part of the formal camp, where there are some tents that are not, you know, not quite part of the managed camp. It could have been individuals who rejected a permit or, you know, new individuals. So there is, we are seeing some overflow, but the actual upper park portion is cleared.
And has the city started its rehabilitation efforts, its restoration efforts for the upper park area?
We have, and, you know, I have to just give credit to city staff. They did an incredible job in helping people to move along and actually really clearing a lot of the trash and hazardous waste and debris while people were moving, which was quite impressive. And so to the best of my knowledge, there isn't some big, you know, project of remediation. The grass needs to be dealt with and whatnot, but it's actually open right now, and people can use the Child's Park area and surrounding areas, and there will be some work I'm sure that park staff will be doing to improve the grass and that sort of a thing, but thankfully all the trash was moved as people were moving along.
Okay, and I'm very pleased to hear that council spoke in advance of this session and addressed some of the other issues. And I was also struck by the permit process and the move process, that there's always a lot of uncertainty, perhaps, and that sort of some inherent chaos, if you will. And it sounds like the issues that were of concern to the plaintiffs were addressed and worked out for the most part. So it sounds like the majority of the permits, the San Lorenzo population has moved into the benchmarks, and that sounds good. What information, if any, do you have, Ms. Bronson, with regards to efforts by the city or county with regards to the accessibility of vaccinations for the unsheltered persons at this encampment?
Yes. So, I mean, this is a county function. Mm-hmm. After I saw some of the allegations and plaintiffs filing, I emailed county council and I said, would you respond to this? Because it took me by surprise. And so the latest information I have from the county is that they estimate that 80% of the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands campers have been offered a vaccine. Not all have accepted, but their estimation is that's about 80%. There was an allegation in plaintiff's filing that the county's mobile inoculation unit has not come to the park in almost 4 weeks. That is false, according to the county. They say, no, our staff bring vaccine at least once a week, usually on Thursdays.
I know you included some of that email correspondence in your filing. Remind me of the date that you have this latest information from the county.
This was immediately after we did our filing. So this is from last weekend. This wasn't included in my filing because it was after I had already submitted it.
But it was in the last week.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So they still come at least once a week, sometimes more than once a week, and they still are operating in a clinic one day a week to vaccinate persons experiencing homelessness with no wait. You can just walk in and receive the vaccine.
Okay. All right. What is the city's view on how we move forward? It sounds like the bench lens has actually only been up and set up for a couple of weeks. We're still in somewhat of the early days. Mr. Prince has pointed out this, we have other encampments being cleared and, you know, some concern around negative impact on this, what is certainly intended to be a well-managed encampment. It seems like maybe we need a little more time, see how this plays out. What is the city's view? And also, what is the city's view? My thought is to send the parties away to meet and confer a little bit about a collaborative structure, as Mr. Prince has raised here today. But let me hear from the city if you're prepared to address it. But let's start with sort of putting the collaborative structure request aside. Let's talk about, the next 30 days or something.
I think, Your Honor, I think you're right. I think we could use a little bit more time to, formulate a plan as to what what the next steps are. And it might be wise to set another status conference in maybe 3 weeks. As to this issue of a collaborative structure, there's not a lot of trust between the parties, to be honest. I mean, I get along just fine with Mr. Prince, but, what we saw in the benchlands as, the city was undertaking this effort to, put people in a more structured situation, provide them tents, provide them, increased hygiene. We saw what we felt were efforts to undercut the city's efforts. And so I think there's going to be a lot of pushback from the city. We need to talk to obviously city council and city manager about this. But there could be some pushback. This is something that, Mr. Prince sort of raised to me just yesterday in our discussions.
Sure. And I wonder if, meeting twice a week, twice a month, between the city representatives who are responsible for the park and some of the residences to address some of the issues, I wonder if that might help to build trust. I appreciate the absence of trust. It's been a tough year, and of course, we're coming off of these issues around this particular litigation and injunction. So I'm just raising that question.
Can I comment on that, Your Honor?
In a moment, Mr. Prince. Right now, Ms. Bronson still has, so I'm coming back to you. Don't worry.
Oh, that was me that interjected.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Pandati. I saw Mr. Prince move on the screen, and that's where I went.
I'm also Tony. That's where the confusion comes.
There you go.
But I did want to, when Ms. Bronson.
Everybody gets a turn, I promise. Let me, I'm still directed to Ms. Bronson, and then I'll turn to Mr. Kentucky and Mr. Prince.
Some of the conduct that Ms. Bronson was referring to includes shenanigans like erecting prop tents to try to inflate the number of people at the camp and whatnot. My concern from the perspective of the city is twofold. One is that you have a handful of plaintiffs that are ostensibly speaking for 135 individuals. And so the injunction that the plaintiffs are involved in, their interests do not necessarily represent the interests of everyone in the encampment. The other concern I have, and I don't think the city has immediate plans to disband the camp upon dissolution of the injunction, because frankly, given the homeless population that we have in the city, in some sense, it may be preferable to have a managed encampment situation than just having people dispersed throughout the community and moving into other places where additional environmental harm and nuisance conditions might arise. I just recall back to the initial hearing that we had in January, and the real issue of concern, and I think it was a legitimate one, was the likelihood of the dismantling of the encampment becoming a super spreader event. under COVID-19. And that is really at the heart of what the injunction was intended to address. What it does not address is the hundreds of homeless individuals that reside in different parts of the city and county. And so I guess my question at this point is, while the camp has some beneficial aspects, is it necessary to have a federal injunction in place in order for the city to continue to attempt to manage the homelessness issues that we encounter on a day-to-day basis? So that's really at the heart of it from my perspective. It's not that the camp itself at this point, I mean, I think the conditions have improved there substantially because of the most recent order that enabled the city to undertake some effective management tools and implement some standards. My question is, do we need to have that injunction in place for the city to continue to do what it's been doing?
And that's fair, and it's something that's exactly why we continue to have these status conferences, because I'm continuing to evaluate the foundation for the injunction, and which is, as you indicated, Mr. Kandati, which is not to, you know, the disbanding and the encampments would exacerbate the COVID situation, certainly among that population. And we have made straight strides past that, but a key part of that was to modify the injunction for this encampment. And I'd like to get a little further into our good COVID numbers. It's only been a few months, and we've had good few months before now. I think this time it's different because we do have vaccines, and we all are hopeful for that. I'd like those numbers to play out a little bit further, and I'd also like the modified injunction, which now reflects the Benchlands encampment, to get a little bit more time under it. But I take your point, and the court does not disagree that it is not part of the jurisdiction in this litigation to direct how the city manages its unsheltered population writ large. You know, this is very focused on the San Lorenzo Park area, now moved into the Benchlands, and managing it in light of what we hope is now truly the receding of the pandemic. So I hear you, and that's the question, is are there grounds for the injunction or not, and can we make that call yet, or do we need just a little more time?
And I don't think the city is necessarily opposed to a, you know, to a continuance of the injunction in the short term. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Bronson suggested maybe come back in 3 weeks, so maybe you suggested that, Your Honor. And I think that sounds fine, but the city's ultimate objective here is to, you know, we understand that we need to continue to struggle to both assist and to manage our homelessness problem.
Yeah.
And to assist the homeless community to the extent we have the resources to do so. But ultimately, you know, again, I would argue that a federal court injunction is not the best tool to do that, and in fact is not helping us in regard to the larger homelessness problems that we have.
Understood. I think I hear what you're saying, and I think there's some life left in the injunction, but the day will come for it to be dissolved. I take into that evaluation the strength of the city's efforts in establishing the Benchlands Park, the marking the encampments, the cleanup, cleanup as you go, the new tents. I mean, I looked at all the photos. I have followed it both in the evidentiary submissions and in the publicly available information. you know, it's of great interest to all community members. So, but I take that as a sign. The court is not convinced, and when the day comes, Mr. Prince may have a different view, but maybe not. At this point, I'm not concerned that dissolving the injunction will mean that the encampment at the Benchlands goes away at that time. I appreciate there are seasonal issues, but again, that's not for us to handle, at least not right now.
If I could just add, I got two kind of important points of information texted to me by city staff, if I could just relay to you. So one is that there currently is a weekly meeting at the camp with the camp occupants between the camp stewards, which are, I believe, we've hired two part-time employees to sort of manage the camp. And so there is this weekly meeting with city staff that goes on between the camp occupants. You know, and as Mr. Condotti mentioned, there would be a true issue as to whether or not the camp occupants would actually want the plaintiffs to speak on their behalf and to represent them. There's some serious doubt as to whether or not that would in fact occur. And the other important fact that I was just relayed to me was that every person has been asked by our new camp stewards if they want the vaccine, and so that's new information to me, and we can provide those numbers to you at our next hearing.
And is that a reference to all members of the current Benchlands encampment? Is that what?
Yes, correct.
All right, Mr. Prince.
Well, you know, I want to begin by saying, first of all, that the notion, it seems that council, I don't want to get too sidetracked here because we want to move forward. We have officially, recognized the successful efforts to relocate the camp, and we want to move in a more collaborative direction. But I have to say that efforts to disengage the plaintiffs, the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, the majority of people in the park, at least in San Lorenzo Park at the time the litigation was underway, were members of our union. We are the party in this case. The fact that the city now has taken upon itself to establish some kind of group down there, which the city attorneys are now representing as somehow at variance with the named organizational plaintiff. We're not obligated under the law to disclose the names of our members. That those issues were decided decades ago with the NAACP cases and some other cases. They're concerned about reprisals. They're concerned about being identified. But the fact of the matter is that we really are troubled by efforts by defendants in this case, counsel in this case, to make some kind of create some kind of division and to substitute now something they're creating for the recognized party plaintiff in this case. And its membership. We named individual plaintiffs, some of whom were officers, some of whom were not. We did not name every single member of the union for the reasons I just provided. We have hundreds of cards that have been signed over the last 3 years authorizing the union to represent homeless individuals in the park and elsewhere, and signing on to as members of the union. So I need to make that record because I'm quite concerned what the city's happening. I also want to point out, Your Honor, in terms of collaboration, that during the Ross Camp situation, for 6 months, there was active and I think productive collaboration between the Ross Camp Council, which was not set up by the city, but it was established by the residents under the guidance of Alicia Kuhl, who is the president of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union. She was the primary organizer. And Desiree Quintero was also an officer of the union. And for 6 months, there was meetings with Chief Hadjick from the fire department, with Megan Bunch, with Susie O'Hara. For 6 months, there were regular meetings. At one point, the city, in collaboration with the camp council, drafted a grid for how the camp could be cleaned up and maintained. And then it was only because the city, in our effort to get a preliminary injunction, repeatedly represented that they had alternative shelter for everybody to go to, that the judge found that it was inappropriate to provide the injunction. But it is possible to collaborate, and I think I agree with Your Honor that that's what establishes trust. It breaks down divisions. And this whole conception of, I believe on all sides, a very unfortunate conception that there are just these deep divisions are highly problematic. And we think that Judge England's approach, approach we saw in Salinas during that litigation 6 years ago, where I had worked out a collaborative arrangement with the deputy city attorney to make individualized inspections of the biggest encampment down there, the Chinatown camp. It worked for a time. And I think that's the way to go. This is a massive societal problem. And the city keeps saying its resources are limited. We can be a resource and have been a resource on feeding the homeless, of trying to have some measure of agreements here and there to sustain the homeless community as best we can. And more people are becoming homeless. And that's a concern that we all should share. So we still would like to see some kind of collaborative, an order for some kind of ongoing collaboration. Also, Your Honor, we're not convinced that the representations, I've got Mr. Cottagini's email right here, and they say that they have no data on number of people vaccinated at specific encampments. No data. You would think that in the process of offering and providing vaccinations, there would be records. There would be data. None have been provided to us, and as recently as yesterday, Mr. Cottagini admitted he still can't provide it to us. We're very concerned about that, Your Honor. Our information is quite different from the information that's being provided by the city, but which Mr. Cottagini's information seems to run counter against the city's representations. He admits that they don't have any data with regard to how many people. And we filed this. He has no sworn signed declaration on the issue of what they've done to make people aware or to encourage vaccinations. We do. We filed declarations previously that was an ineffective and it was not truly being carried out. So I think that's one of the issues that we could collaborate on. That's one of the issues that we could revisit so that we could, you know, so we could be confident. The court seems interested in those numbers, the actual numbers and the actual efforts. Just last night on national television, President Biden was there on encouraging marginalized communities to get the vaccinations. This is ongoing. This is still happening. And if we want to be talking in terms of the public health and the safety of the people whose safety was protected for the last 4 months in that park because of your order, Your Honor, you're issuing that preliminary injunction, who would otherwise have been dispersed throughout the city for the last 4 months. We think that we need to resolve this issue of the status of the vaccinations in a more data-based manner. But having said all that, I don't want to disregard the progress. We said from day one, Your Honor, that our scope was limited. I remember telling you that we'll fight the other battles another day. We do think that there. I think we're on the road to everything has its time and place. And it has a purpose, and when that purpose is accomplished, it has to be brought to an end. We're respectful of the court's time. We're respectful of the extraordinary nature of injunctive relief, and so I think we're prepared to move forward in that way. And we would agree to another status conference, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever the court and counsel seems to be indicating, but that we begin immediately the process of sitting down. Identifying issues and seeing what we can do. Otherwise, I guarantee you, Your Honor, the environment in the city of Santa Cruz is not going to be a good one around this or other issues related to the homeless community. We need to get on a different footing here, as we've done in other cities.
Thank you, Mr. Prince. Helpful. I appreciate it. Okay. Here's how I want us to proceed. I would like some more. I want a little more time for the modified preliminary injunction with regards to the Benchlands encampment to get underway and operate. It seems to be off to a good start.
also want to get a little more distance with regards to the continuing downward trends in the COVID metrics and the upward trends in the vaccination metrics. I do appreciate that there are challenges in good record keeping on the unsheltered population. What I'm really most interested in is evidence of the efforts to make vaccine available. And I have seen those efforts in the declarations that were provided. But if we can have, whatever information there is of supporting that, and supporting, for example, the representations made in court today, if there are the right people involved, whether it's a camp steward or others, who can attest to the fact that, they've gone tent to tent and made offers of vaccines, it's hard to know what more you can do. I know, Mr. Prince, you'd like to see more information and education, but let's, again, I don't know what the evidence is, and I'm obviously interested in that effort. That goes hand in hand with the passage of time and the smooth running of the camp. And as I said, I also have in mind, only because the governor picked it, the June 15th date of reopening and of abandoning the tier levels. Santa Cruz, like Santa Clara, is still in the orange tier, but that's a lot better place than where we've been. So what I'm going to do is set us for a hearing on June 29, and that will be essentially an order to show cause as to why the injunction should not be dissolved at that time. And I'll take submissions from the parties on the 22nd, that's 7 days in advance. And I'm setting it there because I want that to follow the June 15 reopening day. I want us to get through the next 30 days, get to that reopening, and then have the parties. That's, I think, a good time to evaluate, put your information in the status report to me, and then we will convene on the 29th at 11 a.m. And it would, as I say, that'll be in order to show cause as to why the injunction should not dissolve at that time. In the interim, the parties are directed to meet and confer over the issues that have been raised here today, particularly what does post-injunction, what does management of the camp look like? Do you need continued court supervision of that, or is there enough of a process in place and an agreement between the parties that, that they'll continue to engage in that process for some period of time? And maybe not. Maybe the parties can't agree. Maybe they have very different views. But it sounds like both sides could benefit from meet and confer. I'm interested in the camp stewards. That certainly sounds like the city has made some resources available to handle some part-time employees. That's their job and focus. And let's, I think you all need to talk more about that. And then you can report back to me. So that's how I see us proceeding at this point, and with an end in sight, assuming that all of the numbers continue as we want them to, and that the management of the benchlands is settled in, and is, that modified injunction served its necessary purpose.
Judge?
Yes, Mr. President.
Could I, just two very quick points. One is that I just want to... we are looking at this newly enacted ordinance, and I know you indicated in the court's view it's not related. I think there's some relation and some overlap. I just want to let you know or notify you or to make it clear that should we take some separate filing some claims separately. I don't want you to think that we're trying to circumvent or trying to disregard your you know, your view on the nature of prospective challenge to that. So I don't want you to think that we're doing an end run around anybody.
There are plenty of lawsuits to go around for all the judges. Right?
Okay. And then the other thing, Your Honor, if I could, and if it's not appropriate to discuss this here, I understand it, but we did get your modified order on ex-party communications to the court that are now, I guess, going to be made part of the record, somewhat redacted, the last name's redacted. And I know all the letters that have been sent under seal, none of them have come from our side, so to speak, not one. And we've been very mindful about seeing to it that certainly our clients and the union members don't engage in that, and the community also has not. There's not a single instance that I'm been aware of. So I'm a little curious, and I think you raised in your order that there is an issue of public access to these proceedings, but I'm still not really clear on I guess I'm a little concerned that it's in the record and statements that not made under oath, that are in the record by way of these letters that are very hostile in many cases to the homeless community and to you and to the court, frankly. But that's the way however you want to proceed with it. But I was a little bit not quite clear on what the thinking of the court is on that.
And as I indicated, the members of the community from all sides, as far as I can tell, but again, I don't. If it doesn't come from counsel, I don't review and evaluate those. But when concerned members of the community contact the court, I'm not sure that the community members appreciate if they send a letter to the court. It goes through the clerk's office, and if it has a case number on it, the clerk, the clerk posts it. So I think that sometimes I'm always concerned that community members have unwittingly exposed themselves publicly when perhaps that wasn't their intention. They may think that submitting a letter is private. Submitting a letter to a judge is not private. So again, we have full transparency. These are public proceedings. The public, you can see from our number of participants, joins and sits in, listens in. Anyone can get access to the proceedings as it should be. They can access any of the filings, and our protocol to seal filings is really, really narrow, very, very narrow. And on further reflection, other than the personal information, I don't think it's appropriate to seal any of that information. It doesn't really qualify for sealing. I have directed the clerk's office to redact the personal identifying information because I'm always concerned, as I say, that when a citizen submits a letter, they don't appreciate that, in fact, it's going to be posted, and everyone will see it. So that is the thinking and the reasoning, and obviously transparency of these. But these are public proceedings, and it's important that be foremost with some appropriate protections.
Okay, Your Honor.
Ms. Bonson, did the city want to be heard on that at all? Okay. All right, then. So the parties will meet and confer as I've directed, and you'll get me an additional status, and we'll take up the solution of the injunction on the 29th of June. All right?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And we are adjourned.
Your Honor, I'm sorry. What time is the hearing on the 29th?
It's at 11 a.m. on the 29th. Please stand by.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Have a good day, everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Recording stopped.